If you go to John Rothschild for investment advice, these are the kinds of tips he'll give you. If you think it's right, then it's wrong, and vice versa. Never invest in anything owned by your broker, and never trust a broker whose suit is worth more than your portfolio. Freelance writer John Rothschild decided to sink what for him was a lot of money into the stock market and write a book about his odyssey as an average investor. I asked him what got him started on this journey.
Well, I decided that there are millions of us out there that have always said if we just had the chance to study this, we could do better than all the experts and hotshots on Wall Street. So I thought, well, this is my chance.
Now, your book is called A Fool and His Money. You didn't expect to play the fool. You thought you'd make a killing?
That's right. It was supposed to be called How I Made a Million on Wall Street and Retired to Bimini. Those are the usual books, but unfortunately, it turned out the other way.
How'd you get the money to invest?
I had some money that I got from the publisher, part of an advance, and then I tried to sell some silverware and so on out of the house, but my wife wouldn't let me. She was very smart. So I ended up selling an old car and an old sailboat and managed to scrape together $16,500. And with that, I was going to make my fortune.
Now, once you got the money scraped together, you read a lot of books about how to invest your money in the stock market. And what you found, I think, was a lot of contradictions.
I did. I read the entire shelf, I think, from one end to the other, which was probably about 200 books. And as I skimmed through them, every time I finished a book, I would say, aha, there's the answer. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. And then, of course, the next book I picked up said, put all your eggs in one basket. The books were... No help at all. They put me in the proper confused frame of mind to go out and seek some human advice. So in that sense, they got me out of the library. And the only thing I would say to people is you don't have to read all these books.
You went shopping for a broker. What was it about that process that reduced you to thinking, should you choose a broker whose clothing matched or clashed with yours?
Well, after sitting there and talking to several brokers, and basically hearing them parrot back what they expected me to want, I decided that you might as well choose them on the basis of clothing because you're not going to find out anything more rational to choose them on.
The first buy that you made was something of a disaster.
Right.
Would you describe what you did?
Well, I don't know. I think this is maybe typical average investor behavior. After doing all the research in the books and so on and talking to all the brokers, I walked into the office of a particularly charming broker, having not yet chosen a broker, and I saw two things. One is all the stocks on her Quotron were going up by the second, and the other thing is she got a phone call from somebody very excited about a stock named Angstrom, and I found that almost against my will, it was almost a mystical experience, you know, that I decided that Angstrom was for me and that all of the signs pointed in this direction. So I jumped up and yelled, I'll take 5,000 shares. And then, of course, I had to carry through with it. So that was my first reasoned, sober investment, was jumping up and saying, Eureka, 5,000 shares of Angstrom.
After all that reading and after all that shopping for a broker, you were so impulsive.
Well, I think people get excited. Not everyone, of course. But I think one thing that happens is we get excited by the hot tip from Uncle Harry next door or what we hear on the bus. And somehow those things seem to carry more weight than the sort of sober, reasoned approach. So I think what I did is I jumped on a stock, as many people are wont to do.
And what happened with the stock?
Well, it went up for a while, and I thought, boy, I'm a genius. All this studying really did help. And then also that I'd picked a wonderful broker and that I was feeling very smart. And then, of course, it started to go down, so that cured all of those feelings.
So did you sell low?
I sold low. I bought high and sold low.
Once you had $16,500 of yours invested in the market, how was your mood and your spending influenced by how your stocks were doing that day?
Well, that was another thing that I wanted to investigate, was sort of the effects of buying stocks on a person in the household. And I found there were a couple of things that happened. One is that my tendency to turn off light bulbs to save electricity sort of increased. With every $1,000 I lost, I would turn off, say, 10 more light bulbs. And I became somewhat of an ogre to my family because, again, for every $1,000 I lost, I would open the refrigerator and say, well, why do we have two broccolis instead of three? Or why don't we buy the cheaper kind of cat food instead of this expensive cat food? And I think there's some kind of rule there of behavior that if you've got somebody in your house running around peeking to see how many cat foods there are and what the price on them, chances are they've just lost a lot of money in the stock market.
What were your total profits and losses when the list was tallied at the end of this, what, one-year period?
Yes, I ended up with less than $800. So my total, I was at $16,000. So my loss was, I guess, about 90% or maybe more. Whatever $800 is of $16,500. But, of course, it could have been worse, I guess.
I suppose.
Hard to realize, but I, the thing is that, you know, if you've done that badly, I think this book will be your best defense because you can just give it to whoever your critics are and say, well, you know, I didn't do this bad.
Well, the crash of last October came, it's October, right?
Yes, it was October. I've tried to forget, but that was when it was. Actually, I lost most of my money before the crash. But
oh,
anyway.
You did? Oh,
yes,
okay.
I was particularly skillful.
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of really smart investors lost a lot more than you did after the crash.
Absolutely.
How did that make you feel? It evened out the score in a way.
Well, you know, I didn't feel vindictive to people who were making money. I just it made me feel somehow that that my foolish odyssey was maybe more relevant than it seemed back in August, where, you know, it might have seemed that I was this jerk running around losing money and I was the only one in the country. But my hunch all along was, or at least what I wanted to tell myself, was that other people are in this same boat too, and that my experience will help other people sort of understand or at least appreciate, you know, their own losses. And I think that, you know, after October, that came true.
So do you think that anyone who invests in the market is foolish?
I think that anyone who invests in the market without a sense of what they're doing, without a sort of long-term plan, is foolish. I think people who are whipsawed back and forth by, you know, as I did, trying to find the right advisor and then getting off that and going to the next thing, and especially people who get into options and short-term trading, trying to outsmart the people in New York who do that all the time, are foolish. I think people who have a plan and buy stocks and hold them or whatever the plan happens to be and stick to it probably can do pretty well.
Now, I read that you're actually collaborating on a real investment book with someone.
Well, that's true. This has to be the marriage of the sublime and the ridiculous. The sublime being Peter Lynch, who runs the Fidelity Magellan Fund and who, over the last 10 years, I discovered, has far outstripped any other mutual fund in terms of the return. And I went to talk to Peter and was delighted to discover that, A, he believed in all of the kinds of pitfalls that I had written about and also believes that people should not invest in stocks that they know nothing about. In other words, he says if you don't have an edge, if you don't have something in your business or in your life that tells you something about a particular company, you'll never be able to compete with the people out there who do know.
John, you're starting to talk like the author of a serious investment book.
I'm sorry, I'm not the author of a serious investment book, but I'm going to help him tell his story.
Don't you feel like you're playing both sides of the street here?
You know, I would have thought so until I heard what his story was. And in fact, it's very similar to my story. And I think that in a way, I've set out the problem in a humorous way. And I think he has some kinds of, in some way, represents a solution.
Are you still a fool?
I'm still a fool. Now that this has happened to me, I'm trying to think of something else I can write about that where the fool sort of carries on. And I'm sure that in my own life it'll happen, so I won't have to look very far.
One last thing. I take it you're not part of the Rothschild family.
No, they seem to have done very well. I think that if they had hired me as an investment advisor 100 or 50 or even 10 years ago, we wouldn't be hearing much about the Rothschild family.
Well, John Rothschild, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thanks, Terry.
John Rothschild's new book, A Fool and His Money, is published by Viking. This is Fresh Air.